Would you like to find out how to put together a successful wilderness backcountry fly fishing trip? Do you know which app can help you with safety and finding fish while there? McKenna Holslander is on the podcast to take us into the movie she created around a backcountry trip and what you can learn for your next trip to make it more successful. This is the Wet Fly Swing podcast, where we show you the best places to travel to for fly fishing, how to find the best resources and tools to prepare for that trip, and what you can do to give back to the fish species we know and love. Hey, I'm Dave, host of the Wet Fly Swing podcast. I've been fly fishing since I was a kid. I grew up around a fly shop and have created one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in the country. I've also interviewed more of the greatest fly anglers than just about anyone in this country to date. Today, McKenna Holslander gives us her go-to gear for the backcountry, how to plan for the worst in a trip, and some safety items you should be thinking about, and why creating a timeline is the key to success. She's going to go into it on her trip, how she did it. Plus, you're going to hear the story of McKenna crashing an airplane while heading out into the woods and what it felt like to survive this plane crash. Let's get ready to head into it. McKenna Holslander from OutcastAdventures.com. How you doing, McKenna?
Hi, Dave. I'm good. How you doing?
Great, great. Really awesome to have you on here. We're going to dig into a topic that I love, which is kind of backcountry, you know, hiking and maybe some camping, and talk about what you have going there in this trip you did. And we're going to get into trout routes because they're obviously an awesome company. We're going to talk about some of that, maybe how you use that on the trip. And then Outcast Adventures. You've got this really cool program, which appears to be a lot focused on women and getting them outdoors, but we'll talk about that as well. So let's take us back before we jump in there and tell us how you got into fly fishing. What's your first memory?
Yeah. Wow, what an exciting topic. Well, it's kind of, you growing up in Montana, it's one and the same. You kind of have to grow up and be an outdoor girl. So my brother and my dad and my grandpa were big fly fishermen. And I just remember getting drug along on all these different adventures. And my brother's about 4 years older than me, so I was just trying to keep up. And he just dove into fly fishing, and because he did it, I kind of was like, well, I guess I'll check it out and try to have some fun out there. It was kind of tough because I was also an athlete. I played college hockey, so I was trying to be this athlete at the same time falling in love with the backcountry and camping and fishing and different things. So I definitely had my love-hate relationship with Montana early, but this kind of became something that I always came home to do. And what weekends I could spend out on the river, I spent every minute I could. And who doesn't love to get out to such cool places like Montana and catch cutthroat trout on the weekends?
Yeah, that's it. What part of Montana did you grow up in?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Kalispell, so northwest part. Definitely getting busier, but it was a great place to grow up and small town feel with big adventures.
Right, right. And what are the, I know a little bit of that. That's what would be some of the big waters or rivers around that area?
Actually, I feel like there's a few different options. It's kind of cool because people dispense all over the place. They can go east or west, but the big parts are like the Flathead River. Some people head south and hit on the Missouri and they go to Craig. And so it's some big waters kind of within a stone's throw for people. But I would say I grew up primarily on the Flathead. Sometimes I head over west to the Thompson. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that side, but
no,
there's a lot of different water, great water you can get onto within relatively small driving hours. So.
Gotcha. And then eventually you moved, you're in the Midwest now. Maybe talk about that, because a lot of times you hear, I think people move out west, you know, the east to west, but you did the west to east move, right?
I know. I've got it flipped. I don't know why I'm doing that.
Although it's not bad. Although the cool thing is that it's to the Midwest. Maybe you could talk about more of where you went. And then, we've even talked about that, the same thing. It seems like the Midwest has some really cool stuff. I mean, you got weather you got to deal with, right, this time of year and stuff. But maybe tell us that. Why did you make the move? And then how are you feeling about it now that you're there?
Honestly, I don't know why I did. I don't know what I was thinking. I was born in a cold state and I chose a colder state to go to college for. My only good, like I said, my only good response is I just wanted to be a hockey player. So I went to college in the Twin Cities, and that's where I'm at right now doing some athletic stuff. So I feel like, you know, my answer is good enough to be like, okay, I'm going to undergo super cold weather in the city. But I've learned, you know, you go to different places and you learn to like the different things it has to offer. And, you know, I know we're going to touch on trout routes later, but I definitely wouldn't have been able to, you know, have the connection with those guys if I wasn't here and didn't get to meet them. So every place has its perks.
Yeah, that's right. So is trout routes, are they in, are you now, is this Minneapolis, St. Paul, or what's your,
I'm right in the middle, actually. So right between the cities.
Gotcha. Okay. And it's trout routes. Are they there in the same area?
Yeah, they're like 10 minutes away from me right now. And so I actually met Eric, who the guy I kind of mostly talked to at Trout Routes through the Fly Fishing Hamline Expo, which is crazy because, so I went to Hamline University and played hockey. And someone told me early on, I was like, McKenna, you're a big fly fisher, right? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, there's this really cool fly fishing expo at Hamline. You got to go. And I was like, are you serious? And so I was like over the moon excited. I was like, oh my goodness, there's all my people, you know? Like,
right.
So that's how I met Eric and got in touch with Trout Routes guys.
Oh, gotcha. And is Hamline, is that where you went to school or college?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You did. Okay. And that makes sense to me. I mean, obviously hockey. I think, did you even get to a point where you're playing some pro hockey level along the way?
So I graduated here about 2 years ago from college, and then I went and played pro over in Austria, Salzburg, Austria, for a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, believe it or not, one of my first stops over there was the fly shop. And I went over there and was so excited to be traveling the world playing hockey, but I got to get into some really great brown and rainbow fly fishing, which was so exciting.
Oh, nice.
So again, you talk about like the mergers of two worlds of hockey and the outdoors. And actually, I would totally recommend if anybody's going on a trip overseas to Europe and they're in the Austrian, Switzerland area, there's some amazing fly fishing. And what's cool about Salzburg is that's where I was at. This super old town feel, like, you know, you've got the Europe feel of town, and right through it is the river. And you can fish right like in town right there, and there's just massive rainbows coming up on flies. It's crazy.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That's the world is amazing because we're in our little, like we're talking today, we're going to talk about, you know, this little part of Minnesota, or well, we're probably not going to talk just Minnesota, but we're going to talk, you know, your experience in Montana, your experience in Minnesota, but yeah, there's a whole Europe. I mean, there's a giant, you know, there's lots of places to fish. Do you feel like, how do you feel? I always love thinking about that because for me, it seems challenging, like all these places you want to go. What do you think about that when you say that you look at all these places to fish? Do you get more kind of feel like, oh, I can't ever do anything? Or are you excited?
No, I got so excited. I mean, it was definitely an added layer because I was in like Germany and in different places. It's like you're trying to read the road signs, and it's a whole nother level trying to get into these remote places in a different country that you can't, you know, stop at the gas station and be like, hey, like, I'm looking to find some good this trout access, you know? So it was an added layer, but you realize like your intentionality is the same. Like your purpose for why you're going is the same. And so you get excited whatever small rivers you find, and like you said, there's so much opportunity out there. But just the few times that I got to go out, I was like, that was amazing. And I'm definitely going to go back and try to find some new places.
Yeah, that's sweet. Well, let's jump in. I think we'll save a little bit of the hockey for later if we can, because I'm interested in that. We have a lot of northern friends, especially up in Canada, that you know, hockey is huge. But let's jump into this wilderness trip, because we have this, and we want to talk also about Outcast Adventures that you have going. But maybe describe this trip in, I think it was Montana, where you went in the backcountry. Maybe you're dropped off from a plane or something. Break that down for us.
Yeah. So it really kind of starts around like, and it goes back to kind of how I grew up. And you grow up learning to fly fish in a certain way, especially out in Montana. I know everybody has, you know, different approaches to fly fishing, and there's such a wide spectrum as far as how people operate. But I realized that I really grew up in a unique way and learning to fly fish and the respect and etiquette and ethic that I was just instilled and didn't really know that was a part of, you know, my habits. And then I was talking with my videographer, Riley, who's a great friend since high school. And we just kind of saw this story of, wow, like there's so many new people into this category of the backcountry, into camping and fishing and hiking. And they didn't have the luxury of growing up with those instilled expectations or morals or habits. And so we kind of just saw this storyline of like, wow, we would love to just show this in a really unique, connective way. And so we said, like, let's go way back up into some of the coolest places in Montana and get up in there and get away from maybe what most people see on a postcard. And like, let's just really connect with people and maybe inspire them and educate them that there's a whole untouched level of fly fishing that you can connect with that brings a whole new excitement, I would say. And so we're like, this is such a unique story, and I think so many people can connect with it, and they don't have to grow up in Montana, you know, and they don't have to grow up in these wild places to appreciate them. And I think it all kind of started too is as a guide, I would run into so many people that were so far off that expectation. You know, you see people throwing a worm on a treble hook saying, I want to catch a bull trout. And the intention of the story is to say, like, inspire people to have that more of a connective aspect to the fly fishing. And, you know, there's it's harder and it's for a reason and it brings about new success in other ways, if that makes any sense. And so
yeah,
we went with this intention and we're like, that's what we aim to capture. We want to, you know, connect people to these places and what they mean. And so it was so unique because I go to those places all the time. I try to make it out each summer. And it's so different bringing a camera. It's so different. Oh, wait, hold on. Like, we got to do that again. Fall down that cliff, Riley. We got to get that on film.
Yeah, because you guys were doing this. Did you have the plan to submit this to F3T? Was that part of the goal?
Yes, that was. And that was just like, hey, like, how can we get this story out to the most people and within the fly fishing community? And so we're still in contention. We're excited. But either way, we have so many great sponsors like Trout Routes that are going to put that film out and so people can see it, get excited about it.
Right on. And so that film probably, when do you find out? I guess you probably have to wait a little bit. When can people see it? Like, can people check it out right now?
They can see it right now. So we're still waiting to hear back. We should hear back actually really, really soon because it's going to be rolling here at the end of January. So we will know. It's kind of one of those, like, you wake up every morning and my eyes are half closed because I'm waiting for an email that I might be getting.
Right. Yeah. How does that feel when you're, I mean, after, yeah, it's huge.
It's so nerve-wracking. I like refresh my email. I'm like, please no, like, not today, not today. But it's nerve-wracking, but it's exciting. And I think that, like, something I'm telling myself is, you know, either way, we're going to have it out there and people can check it out and it's going to be exciting either way. So.
Okay. So when this episode goes live, it'll probably be in a month or two. So you might have it out there. Where, I mean, I don't know if there's a title yet, but I guess they could just go check in with you maybe on your website. Maybe get a heads up in 2 months where they could find it.
Yeah. So you can definitely find a lot of the information on my Instagram, which is just McKenna-Holslander11. And then that there's a link in there. You go to my website, which is going to be outcastadventures.com. It'll be on there. Trout Routes will be able to put it out. So there'll be different links and connections and when hopefully we can send that, I can send that to you and you could maybe put that in the bio or whatnot and get people need to connect to it.
Sweet. And so you mentioned inspire, connect, I think converge, maybe generations, things like that. I've heard some of that about what you have going. Talk about that. What was your ultimate goal for this thing? You described some of it. Is also this generational thing, is that part of the video as well? What was your premise behind it all?
It's amazing how you feel like you're on one page and you learn things. Or you think you know these things. And then when you go to, like I said, when you go to film it, you kind of retouch all the bases. And so I put my grandpa, who he's 88 here in a month, and put him in front of a camera. And I was like, okay, like, here we go. We're gonna talk about fly fishing.
This is awesome because my dad, you know, where our generations are a little, I think I'm ahead of you a little bit. But my dad's about 83. And it's the same thing. I'm trying to get him on a podcast, but it's a little bit of a struggle. How was that with your grandpa?
Oh my goodness. I was like, okay, here we go. Like, we're going to talk about fly fishing and just touched a little bit. Like, and he would talk for like 30 minutes. I'm like, okay, wow, we're going to have to cut through that a lot. Like, wow, how did we get over here and on these random topics? But it was so cool because I, you know, a big part of me growing up was my brother would take me in. And then when he left, when I was in, he's like I said, 4 years older. So I was alone in high school as an only child. And so I really took that step to go learn more with my grandpa, and he'd take out these old reels and these old fly boxes, and he'd have these old pictures, and you know, you learn, just painted such a picture of him, you know, learning how to fly fish. And so did my dad and my brother, but they're just, you see the different generations and you see it kind of passed down. And so it was so cool to just pull those things back out and have him talk about it. And so it was definitely unique putting him in front of a camera and be like, all right, you know, talk about that time that you went up to Canada going for big cutthroat up in the elk or whatever it was. And so that was so unique and cool. And again, like, you just touch all the bases again. You get to go through those stories again. And then it's such a blessing to say, like, wow, that's unique to my family. And, you know, you just know, wow, people are going to connect with that. And then we also got the privilege of meeting with John Fraley, who is actually a writer, a really well-known writer within the state of Montana. And actually, I would say nationally to some extent. Who talked about these wilderness complexes as someone, he grew up there and he was a fish biologist. And so he was super instrumental in the bull trout like learning different things about bull trout, their migration, cutthroat trout. And he's like one of the first guys to get in like a scuba suit and swim out behind cutthroat. And he was so cool to sit down and talk about and just ask questions about. And we really wanted to touch hard on the conservation aspect of this story, because that's kind of part of all of it is, you know, we're teaching etiquette and ethic and it's getting passed down from generations. But at the heart of that is conservation and why we do hold ourselves to such a standard. And so he just really brought in a lot of that, you know, information that not everybody knows, certainly that I didn't know. And he would pull out old pictures and different things. And so
what was something with John that you remember that really sticks out as something that you learned from him?
I feel like so many different things. We could talk about flies, we could talk about fishing, we could talk about all these different things for hours and hours and hours. But the one thing that really lit a fire with me was, he's definitely a lot older now, but he would go back to when he was, you know, my age, 25, younger. And he said, I just had such a like passion for adventure and curiosity. You know, he's like, if there was a river or a stream up there up in the next basin, like I was hiking to it and I was going to it, and I would go alone or I'd bring a friend. And he just had such a sense of adventure to go and experience and see. And so much of that, I think, comes in through the camera lens. And I'm like, wow, like I just want to go and experience it that too. You know, kind of what we touched on earlier, you know, there's so many rivers and there's so many different mountains and basins to go check out. And you just want to go see them all when you talk to him, because he's been to all those places. So
that's cool. So he's inspired you.
Yeah, it's just inspired to go check and see, because I feel like, you know, this generation is so much like, well, where are the big fish and like where, how far is
right.
it? And, you know, we're so sticklers and stingy about our effort. And, you know, one thing he just talks about was like, there may be big fish, there may not be big fish. It might be a complete bust. The riverbed might be dried up, but go check it out and go and risk it. It might be your favorite place. So I definitely was nudging him like, hey, where are the big trout now?
Right.
Where to go?
Right. Where do I go? Yeah, you want to get some big trout. So now, did you get some big trout on the video footage?
Oh, for sure on the video. Yeah, there was a few. Actually, one of the craziest things is we got another sponsor from Cocopelli Pack Wraps, which I love them. I love the pack wrap. And that was the whole premise of this trip, was we were going to go pack wrap down, which is amazing. And so you're just in this single raft and it's so easy to navigate. You're bopping up and down the river. And I can't float without fishing. Like I told myself, like, all right, we'll just float and then pull over at different, you know, corners and then we'll fish. I can't have a fly rod in the raft and not be like fishing all the time. So I was like rowing, but fishing at the same time. And I'm sure you can see, like, paint that picture in your head. Like that just doesn't work. And so I would just 60s all the way around. And so one time I threw the fly out just, you know, corner pocket, foam line, and floated completely past it. And the fly rod is behind me, like I've got my back to the fly, and I'm just like guessing. And this nice cutthroat comes up and eats it, and I'm just I'm backwards, I'm flipping around, I'm spinning all over the place. And Riley's just on the video camera, like, oh my goodness, I got it on camera. So, it was definitely some nice fish, some cool experiences, and some crazy shots for sure.
Yeah, and describe the trip a little bit. Maybe go back to. Take us back. Somebody's planning this trip, or you were planning it. Like, talk about what's the first step. How did you get into where you were going? And was it just somebody dropped you off out there?
Yeah, we just got dropped off. And like I said, it's unique because I do these trips a lot. Not a lot. I wish I could say it was every day, but it's definitely it's not every week. It's a very unique place, but it's just different because you bring the camera and you're here to tell a story that you can't just go run and do your own thing, I guess. So yeah, we got dropped off. We were up there and just kind of, you know, the first kind of steps, managing your gear and making sure, okay, like we got to make sure that we tell the story correctly and we tell like the severity of these places where we're at and how unique they are. So you capture those drop off points and the feeling of being dropped off. And, you know, when I was talking to Riley about this story of like, how do we want to do this? It was more like, I love these places and we connect through these places. And so how do we get that on camera? How do we explain, you know, how remote we are? And
what does that feel like for you when you get dropped? And by dropped off, are you getting dropped off of like a helicopter, a plane, or by a car? What's the drop off look like?
You get by car and then you hike. And so that's kind of what we want to show with the pack wrap, is like hiking in.
Yeah. So you're getting dropped off. Basically, you got your pack, your stuff, your pack wrap, everything. You're good to go for like a few days or a week sort of thing. Is that kind of what the trip was like?
Yep. So it was, geez, I can't even remember how many total days. like 4 days, I think was a total.
So the one question I had was just right at the start. What does that feel like? So you're dropped off, the car leaves, it's just you for the next 4 days. What does that feeling feel like?
I feel like it's a mixture. You know, sometimes you have like that like gut of like, oh, wow, we're doing this. And then you're excited and, you know, you're amped and you want to get out there. And I think for me, it's like, okay, like I want to get the first couple miles in there. You know, you're kind of giddy to just get going and get rolling. But then I'm somebody who would leave something at the car or something like that, or like forget something. So, you know, trying to do your due diligence of making sure we have everything and camera batteries and things to be able to tell the story. And then also camping gear, you know, all the importance that comes with that. And so, and again, like you're trying to get those feelings and emotions on camera. And it's tough to kind of capture that sometimes. And so when you're out there, you're trying to just paint this picture of, you know, if you were out there alone. And again, like I'm trying to paint it more of like my dad or my grandpa out there by himself. And like John Fraley, you know, they went out there for that sense of curiosity and adventure. And that's what we're trying to tell, but with a whole camera crew and people. That makes sense.
Right. And how many people were there? What was the crew like to put this together?
Yeah. So this was actually kind of the fun part because we wanted to have we weren't just going to do this one person because we had to film it. We wanted to actually kind of tell it like rally behind like campfire stories with your friends in these places. And again, like we're touching on an aspect of, wow, everybody can kind of connect with being out with the people that you love and that you cherish as friends as well. And like around the fire and how unique that setting is and the stories that get told and the connection that happens. And so we had Riley videoed. He was like, I got the whole thing. So we didn't need to bring another videographer along. It was Riley and I, and we kind of told their story, but then had a few friends with us to kind of say, hey, like, it's so cool to be in these places. And it's super cool to share them with people.
Gotcha. So it was basically a small crew. You had Riley covering the video and you just had to just get out there and do the hiking and floating and fishing, basically.
Exactly. Yep. All of it. And yeah, Riley, you know, he looks like a transformer. He's got like four cameras strapped on him and like, so he's amazing at what he does.
Can you describe the general area? You don't have to tell exactly, but was this Montana? Was this a remote trip in Montana?
Yep, remote trip, Northwest Montana. It's cool because, like I said, there's so many different places that you can go to and get into those remote areas and get into some good fishing.
Yeah. What were overall, when you look at the trip, if you had to say a few tips for somebody that was planning a remote kind of hike-in trip like this, what would be like a few things you'd say, hey, these are some things we learned that might help you with your trip planning?
Definitely start with trail routes, some kind of map system. Because not only does trail routes give you a lot of great information outside from just the map, but like water temperature and different things. So you have an idea of what you're kind of getting into. But I like to leave some for last minute decisions, but well planned out trips. So like, I think we're going to camp here and we can make 12 river miles in one day and kind of like plot your lines. And so I would say like, that's a huge tool to be able to say, okay, like that's how many river miles from this point is to this point. And I've definitely gotten back into some places and be like, I thought it would only take us 2 days and it's taken us five. So I definitely say like have a great mapping system like trail routes that can, you know, plot your lines out, give you some extra information and different access points and whatnot.
Maybe you can describe that on the trout routes, how that works, because I mean, are you remote? There's no cell phone coverage. Are you able to maybe talk about that? Are you downloading the maps and then able to see exactly where you are as you go?
That's exactly it. So that's what's super cool about trout routes is you can just download it and you can still access it. So you don't need that cell phone service, which is so helpful. There's so many apps out there that have maps, but then like explode when you get out of service. So there's no point to them. And so, yeah, super, super key feature there. Like I said, I love the water temperature aspect because, you know, you're getting in these trips in July, late July, sometimes August, and you're getting 6-7 consecutive days of 75 degrees and hotter. And so again, we talk about conservation pieces and, you know, just understanding that, you know, the different water temperatures and what those fish are going through. And, you know, if there's hoot owl restrictions of only fishing in the morning or in the evenings and just respecting that, you know.
Yeah. How did you know the water temperature? What was the tool? How did you know while you're out there?
Yeah. So that's what's on trout routes is they give it to you. And I just check going in beforehand and like kind of keep an eye on it, as well as river flows. It'll give you that too. So different like what CFS the river is. And that's huge for us because we did go to toe with a little whitewater, which obviously, depending on how much water you have, is super important to know different class levels there. And so both of those features are so important going into, like, you know, we touch on what I would have before I go on a trip. And I would definitely know those two pieces of information of what water CFS are we at and what temperature is it.
Perfect. Yeah. So that's another bonus that you can get. And I guess if you're remote, you probably can't get that data, I'm guessing, but you could get it beforehand before you drop into the canyon. Is that how you guys did it?
That's exactly how we did. I just kind of, the week before, kept an eye on different things and was like, oh, well, we're good. You know, it's dropping to this at night and it's dropping here during the day. It's kind of averaging here. So it's great.
Right. And probably a good idea would be to throw in a thermometer anyways, just once you're out there to,
yep,
to know exactly on the day. But you guys, now, what were the species you were fishing for? Was this all cutthroat? Are these west slope cutties that you're fishing for?
The west slope cutthroat. What's kind of cool about Montana is there's a hybrid between a cut and a rainbow. And so it's called a cut bow. It's kind of cool that actually you catch them and, you know, that's 100% pure west slope cutthroat, which is actually a cool aspect that Mr. Fraley was talking about. Is because he was talking in some of those most remote places, there's 100% west slope cutthroat, meaning that there's no outside contaminations from other fish species. And that's, he talks about that and some of how unique that is to not just Montana, but all the places that west slope cutthroat live. So primarily west slope, there's rainbow. We were going to have a little bit of an aspect of bull trout, but because of the different kind of argumentations around bull trout fishing, we kind of like, you know, we wanted to kind of stay on that storyline of the previous generations, and my grandpa and Mr. Fraley all talked about cutthroats. So we're like, let's stick with the storyline and let's stick with what they have to say about that specific fish species.
Gotcha. So you folks, and part of that, I'm guessing, with bull trout is that what bull trout are a little bit more of an endangered species, or you don't want to necessarily promote targeting them. Is that, at least in that area, is that kind of the challenge?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And yeah, with the bull trout numbers coming in, you see so many people come to Montana and they come into a fly shop and they're like, I don't want to catch bull trout. You know, how do I do that? Which it's exciting and it's such a cool fish species. But with the numbers coming in and how endangered they are, it's kind of, we just wanted to walk that line of like our intentionality behind fly fishing isn't just to catch fish and the biggest, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing about doing, I think, the remote, or really any trip, but especially these remote trips, is that you're probably, obviously you want to catch fish and do all that, but the experience of being up there and hiking and floating and being out for 4 days without cell phone coverage, right? That, like, you could probably not catch a fish the whole time and still have a good trip. Would you say that's true?
100%. Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole premise of like, why do we fly fish? Why do we leave? It's not to catch the biggest fish, and success isn't resting upon the fish getting on the end of your line. And so that, keeping that perspective in your mind and helpfully connecting that with other people who are getting into fly fishing and trying to come out to Montana and have these experiences and just understanding like, hey, like there's so much more to this piece of pie than fish.
Yeah, this is great. And we've done some, I mean, I love backcountry hiking and camping and all that stuff. And we've done some episodes on it where we've talked gear and like ultralight gear, stuff like that. And, but for me, I'm always thinking like, I haven't done a ton of it lately, but I'm hoping to kind of get the kids out there and get them into it. But what was your, you know, gear wise, you know, if you think about a little bit on the gear, what was the must have gear that in this adventure you couldn't leave without?
I'm such a gear nerd, which is so embarrassing. It was unique because I feel like this summer I did a lot of really crazy trips that kind of, I really had to hone in my gear. I did this trip and then my brother's in Alaska and we did some doll sheep hunting. And so that's like, you're like, can I bring an extra pair of socks? Like you're really, really trying to your gear. And so actually it's cool because there's so many great people out there that talk about having the right gear. And so there's so much information to help you navigate that. And so for me, we're really spoiled because Coco Pelle had sent us some really great dry bags, and so did Filson. They had some new dry bags coming out, and those are so important to us on this float trip because you're just trying to make sure that you keep things dry, because if your things are getting wet, they're cold and whatnot. And so we had some great dry bags. I can't say there was anything super specific. There's always gear that I take with me. I always have a Garmin. Those are always important to be able to touch base with.
Oh, right. So you got the GPS.
Yep. Got the GPS. And then I always have I love Montana Knife Company, and I always carry one of their knives with me, especially when you're on the river. Different things can happen and get entangled in different spots. So I always have a good knife, different things like that. But I can't really say there's anything super specific as far as, like, I wouldn't live without it, I guess.
Sure. Well, what about your, I always think of the luxury items. Like, back with me, it used to be I'd bring, like, some sort of a chair kit. You know, it's a little extra weight, but, like, what's the one thing you added that you maybe could have left at home?
Oh, my goodness. This is so good. I love to bring, I think it's Backpacker's Pantry. They're creme brulee. I go wild. And I'm going to pack two, okay? Because I know somebody's going to want some and they're going to eat some. So I have to have a little, like, I'll either do, like, the creme brulee Backpacker's Pantry, or I'll bring, like, a little candy or something. I love, well, those little items. Especially on the river, we are also fortunate that Sacred Waters Brewing Company in Montana sent us some beer. So plenty of beer. It was a lot of weight, so we had to drink it early. But those little spoiled items that you get to keep, you feel like you're in town a little bit.
Right on. Sacred Water. So we'll have to check that one. And what's your favorite beer? Are you more like IPA or what type of beer?
I'm a little biased because of the name, but I also love, it's my favorite beer from them, but it's called the Ketchum Lager, and it's got fish on it. So I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Oh, there you go. The lager. Yeah, a good lager. Nice. Good. So wow, you did. So I mean, definitely beer on a backpacking trip is a luxury item for sure. You guys, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So spoiled.
You got to have it though. I'm the same way, because for me, I don't really like the hard alcohol. I'm sure some people are thinking like, well, bring it a little bottle or something, but I've never been a fan of that. But having a beer on the river on a hike that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's and you know, you just put them in the river and they cool down. I think it's definitely the way to go. The hard alcohol, you know, be falling out of rafts and whatnot. So
exactly. Yeah, you don't want that. Good. So you're on this trip. We talked multi-day and you've got basically everything you need. Were you guys having campfires? What was the weather like? Was this a pretty easy, was there anything that happened that was a close call or anything that kind of was a little crazy, or was it all smooth?
It wasn't anything crazy. We got stormed on the first day, actually, which isn't surprising. Sometimes we get some pretty big thunderstorms in the afternoon in Montana, and I'm wild. Like, I love when it rains on the river. I love being on the river when it rains. So, but most everybody else was like, oh my goodness, can we set up camp?
Right.
That wasn't anything crazy. Actually, it was great because it gave us a little bit more water. Definitely made the river rise a little bit, which was great. And set up camp, wasn't anything wild. Just a little rainstorm, woke up to a beautiful day. I have to have a campfire. I love big campfires. And what's great about Montana is there's nice, like, sandy beaches on little sandbars and stuff, so you can get away from the rocks and whatnot. So I love to set up camp a little bit earlier. Like, it doesn't get dark till 10:30. And so I like to set up camp probably like 8 and just fish until it's dark and then go eat in the dark.
That's right. You're fishing for West Slope, right? So they're pretty aggressive. Do you find that, you know, it doesn't really matter time of day, you know, catching fish, or was it like all day or better in the evening?
Yeah. So I feel like it's kind of, it can be all over the map because, you know, when it gets really, really hot, then they can kind of lay low. But most of the time throughout the summer, it's 24/7. Sometimes the biggest fish are caught at the 2:30 p.m. afternoon, which is, you know, some people say, well, then, you know, it's so hot. And yeah, they'll rise on a fly throughout the day. Obviously, that evening time slot, when it cools down, those, actually, I learned this from Mr. Fraley. I used to say, like, hatches, you know, like a mayfly hatch. And I said that with Mr. Fraley. He was like, actually, it's called an emergence or something. Emergence,
oh,
I think.
Right. It's not a hatch.
Yeah. Down to the correct terminology. So you get those evening slots and there's some great emergences. I don't know exactly there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good emergence. Yeah. What's the difference between an emergence or emergences and a hatch? I guess he explained it.
Yeah, so I told him, I asked him that, and he said, it's not, they've already hatched. It's them going from in the water to out of the water, like with wings, I think.
Oh, so they've already hatched. Yeah, okay. We might have to bring him back on to figure out exactly what, but yeah, right. So there's different stages of flies too, whether it's a mayfly or a caddisfly on their life cycle for sure.
He's probably like shaking his head right now because he's probably like, yeah. Oh, I told her. I'm like, oh man, what's your response right now? But this was evening. Whatever they're called, Mr. Fraley will tell you, trout go wild. So that's a fun time.
Yeah, there it is. All right. So basically fishing, was it pretty good overall on your trip, or did you struggle to get those shots you were looking to get?
No, it was good. I think, you know, every every fly fisherman looks at their fly box, and there's like a fly that they like, and then there's flies that they kind of don't love, and then there's a fly that's like, that's my chocolate cake, that is my cheeseburger with a milkshake, whatever, like that's it. And I love to just go out there and, you know, try different flies, but I was like, I know that this one is going to be this one's going to rock it. And right away, just I think we got like 100 yards, not even 100 yards down into the river, and we were already getting out of the boat saying, all right, Riley, like we're on, like
this is it.
Yeah, so we're really fortunate on that, because you know, there's some days are good and some days are tough.
Yeah. What was that fly for you on the trip?
Oh man, now you're getting into some top secret information.
Yeah, right. Well, anything you could, don't save the top secret ones, but
you know what? I found that like in Western Montana, they love, like cutthroat love the little rubbery legs. So anything that kind of resembles a chubby that's got legs in the foam that sits really nice up top, they hammer that thing. So anything with that. And like, I know people know that the color purple seems to be a trend. I think that all the fish out there are girls because they just love the color purple.
Right. There you go. Yeah, that's it. So purple's good and the chubby's good. So you're getting a lot of surface. What was the, I know cutthroat, like what would be an average size of the cutthroats? Because they're not huge fish, right? A lot of these west slopes.
Yeah, no. And I think that's something, you know, people kind of got to take in mind too, because I'll guide people from out of state and they'll be like, well, how many pounds are, well, we're not going pounds. And just like taking in, you know, the context of like, oh, they're living in really cold conditions throughout the winter. There's not a lot of food. There's like, just understanding their whole pretty much life cycle. So they don't really get very big. And I'd say the average is somewhere probably between 10 to 12 inches. And so that's pretty average. But you can also get into some massive cutthroat out there, like 20 to 24 inches. And
that would be a giant.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Wow, this is great. Well, so this is the trip. And like we said, part of this will be, we'll have it out there hopefully where somebody can take a look, whether it's at F3T or on your website. There will be a link as people are listening. So we'll have that. Maybe talk a little bit about your, your website. I guess you have a couple, but the outcastadventures.com for like, who is that for? Are these trips geared for, like, if you're looking to put these together for somebody, is this more women, men? Is this kind of everybody, or what are you looking to get there?
So right now I'm starting out with women's trips. Hopefully in the future I can get to different kind of groups of people. I'd actually love to get to like sports teams, because the heart of it is going to these places and one, like learning different backcountry habits and different things, fly fishing and camping and floating. But at heart of it is like we just talk about that connection piece. And when we're out in these places, we're so much more susceptible to connecting with other people. And even if those people are from different backgrounds and different stories. And so right now I'm focusing on doing these women's trips, groups of 12 to 14 women. And the second question I always get after that is, do I have to know how to fly fish?
Right.
And the answer is, of course, no. And that's, you can come from so many different experience levels. And like I said, the intentionality behind it is to help, one, women get out there and maybe learn different lessons about the backcountry that they didn't have an opportunity to learn before. They didn't have a brother that was dragging them out over rocks and hiking things. So this is give them an opportunity to learn. And learn in a space that, you know, they feel comfortable in. I think I've had some great experience with like taking guys out and as well as taking different female groups out. And the guys could not talk for 10 hours and be like, let's catch the biggest fish. And it's like hardcore for 10 hours. Where if you take women's groups out, it's like margaritas and wow, right. We might catch a fish, you know. So just like the different kind of social setting that brings. And so I'm so excited about it because, like I said, I grew up, you know, fly fishing, but also trying to be this athlete, and the backcountry really just brought so much perspective and so much balance to my life. And I just see it playing out that I get to kind of share that back with people who maybe don't get to experience that.
Cool. Cool. And what is so you 12 to 14 women, why 12 to 14? Why not a different number? Is that, you find that's the right fit?
I think that's like a good overall group size because it's big enough that people can kind of integrate themselves into different smaller groups. But then when you come together as a big group, it's not
too big.
Yeah, it's not too big and it's not too small. And with 14 people, it kind of is like, well, we all have different stories and we all have different connections. And one of the coolest things this last summer was we had a little bit older group, and we had a couple women who had children. Some were married, some weren't. And after that kind of initial barrier of like, wow, like I'm willing to be vulnerable with myself, and they kind of let their guard down. They kind of like, oh, I'm so nervous about this stage of my life. And you kind of just, it's really cool to sit back. Like I said, you sit around the campfire and just watch them connect over, even though they're different stages of their life, they kind of connect over those things that make us human.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's pretty much what it's all about. Yeah, just connecting and telling stories, right? That's part of it. So the anglers right now, kind of female anglers, is definitely one. If somebody was listening now and they were thinking, hey, this sounds pretty interesting, do you think what's the best place to head to learn more?
Yeah, so it would definitely be theoutcastadventures.com. My Instagram has a lot of information. My Instagram is also connected to the Outcast Instagram. And that's going to be really rolling here in the next month as we get up and going for 2024 dates and prices, and all the information that people will want to know will be on the Instagram and also on the website.
Okay, perfect. And we're going to take it out of here with our passport. This is kind of our shout out, our travel program. We're always trying to figure out better places to go. This is, like we said, presented by Trout Routes today, who is, we mentioned it today. I think, what else would you throw for Trout Routes in there for, you know, another feature that you really loved about using that app?
Yeah, like I said, I love the water flow. I love the temperature. I also love that they tell you like different, I don't know if I'm gonna use the right terminology here, but like whether it's a sand bottom or rock bottom.
Oh, right. Like for the substrate, like the substrate of the stream channel.
Yeah, exactly. And like kind of helps you, yeah, like learn a little bit more about that river and maybe what's in it.
Perfect. So part of our, you know, the passport is we're trying to think of, you know, new places to go. So if somebody listening now is thinking, hey, I want to do, you know, one of these trips, I want to go in the remote backcountry, you know, again, yeah, kind of takeaways from your trip, you know, they could watch the video, but what would be something you kind of took away, you learned when you did your journey, that somebody listening now can learn about if they put together a similar trip?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is knowing before you're going, like having an idea of where you're going, what you think you're going to experience there, for like, you know, planning for the unplanned events, which is so key, I think. And again, I think it's so important to have a timeline of, okay, I'm going in this day, and this is going to take me this long to get to this point, and this is where I think I'm going to camp, and this is where I think I'm going to be out. Just that timeline is so critical, not only for, you know, your food and the different things that you're bringing with you, but also for the people that are expecting you when you're back. And so there's just that timeline. And also, I would say, being able to handle the situation if there is something that, you know, wasn't initially planned for, and, you know, planning for the worst, but maybe expecting and excited about the best parts, about the fish.
So being ready, yeah, being able to adjust when things change, like they probably always will. What is the, on the check-in, what was your safety? Like if something, I'm not sure what would be the worst case scenario up there, but maybe somebody breaks a bone or something. What was your plan for the safety check stuff?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that Garmin really just allows you so much more peace of mind, because you can touch base with people outside of, you know, even though you're outside of service, you can touch base with people. And so in those moments, like if someone broke their leg, I feel that Garmin could get us in contact with people right away, knowing that we had a situation. It's actually funny because I have flown into a different part of the wilderness and been dropped off with my family. I was a niece, maybe she's old, probably a junior in high school. And we actually so we'd been there for a few days camping out. It was my brother and my dad. And then we had actually one of my brother's friends from the Air Force Academy. And we had crashed our plane coming out of the wilderness. So it was a great family friend. He was the pilot, and that was his job. He was flying into this remote airstrip. And my dad, I was young enough that like my dad was kind of like, he was making sure we had enough food and all the different equipment and everything. And we like ran out of food on our like second or third day. So I was starving. And my mom had said like, hey, I'm going to make this big breakfast when you guys get home. So when I got in the plane that early, early morning, I was thinking pancakes, like pancakes. And we ended up hitting a big, big downdraft. And I don't know a lot about aviation, but I think just because when you're in those mountains with a small plane, there's so much circulating wind. So we had crashed, and I think that situation taught me so much about handling those future situations that could arise. And so we had to like, we got stuck back there until somebody, we'd gotten to the Forest Service cabin close by, and they had radioed in. So,
wow, that's crazy. So you were in a plane that crashed.
Yeah.
And what is that like? Take us there. So I'm just picturing a plane goes down and crashes and it explodes and blows up. But talk about how this happened and how you survived.
Yeah, so we were doing two trips. So Levi, the pilot, was coming in and picking us, my dad and I, up, going, dropping us off, and then coming back for my brother Taylor and his friend Anthony. And got in, like I said, I was like thinking breakfast. I wasn't even thinking about this plane ride. Didn't even cross my mind. And we were like above the trees. Like there was no part of like takeoff still happening. And Levi says a couple bad words and he flips this like, but he flipped, you know, like in the movies, there's like a button with a case over it, like a no touch, yeah, whatever.
Right. Don't touch the red button.
Yeah. It's the first thing I want to touch, but he flipping up, hits this button, and I'm right next to him. My dad let me have the front, so my dad's in the back, and I'm right next to him. And he hits this thing, and I was like, oh, cool, we'll just, like, coast down.
Yeah.
Just float down. And there was no floating. There was, like, straight down. And I think that, like, everybody at the different part of their life kind of plans for these moments. Like, oh, if my house is on fire and my dog was inside, I'd run in and I'd my dog, right? Or, like, if the plane was going down, like, you just think that you would have this different mindset. And I was, like, a blank screen. Like, I was like, okay, we'll just go down. And to me, it happened super, super quickly. It was so fast. But my dad talks about, like, it was so slow for him. Like, he saw, like, the bags come up and we pushed them down. It was very, very slow. And we hit the ground and we, like, flipped over. And I, like, blacked out. I remember, like, wow. I there's definitely parts I don't remember. And I woke up upside down. Which,
jeez,
you know, is just crazy. And Levi clicked my little seatbelt thing. And I remember like falling down. And then my brother, he ran the whole airstrip, which is funny because he was the most injured because he ran it in his bare feet and he still has a piece of grass in his heel.
Oh, wow. So basically you guys took off and crashed. So your brother saw you crash from the air, from the takeoff.
Yeah. So both of them, my brother's an F-35 pilot and then his best friend, a pilot, and so they knew way before, actually, because they're like, they don't have enough gusto to get up and through it, and so they had started running way before we even had hit the ground.
Oh, wow. So the pilot kind of maybe made a mistake here on the takeoff.
I would say that, like, actually he was commended for, because you don't really know until you're up past those trees what the wind, and so he actually was commended and did a great job because of how quickly he was like, we need to get back down on the ground.
Instead of pushing it.
Yeah, instead of, you know, my brother would be like, we'll make it and gas it. So.
Oh, right, right. What did the red button do? Now looking back, when he pushed that button, what did it do?
I honestly don't, like, I had never really asked. I think it just maybe kills it, like okay, like, kill it. And like I said, I wasn't really asking questions, but I vividly remember that part. And yeah, so we, like, crashed and we were like, wow, that was really crazy.
Wow. Did you ever think you were going to die in that quick? I mean, I'm guessing this took a matter of seconds.
That's the crazy part. So I have always explained this story with one parallel that people sometimes understand and they don't. My brother and I used to, like, put sleeping pads on our stairs and then you get your sleeping bag and you slide down the stairs. And we were the kids that were like, this is so fun, and we'd run. But at the end of the stairs was like a literal wall. And so you would be full blast, but then you'd, like, hit the wall and it would be high on life. And then 2 seconds, you'd be like, oh, wait, I gotta hit the wall. Just like that. Like, I was like, oh, we're falling. Okay, I'm just going to, like, you know, kind of bury my head. We're going to hit the ground, but then I'm going to get up and run back up the stairs and do it all over again. And so there was no moment of like, wow, like, this is a pretty high intense situation. And yeah, it was just like, well, jeez, I'm going to hit the wall and it might hurt, but, you know, maybe we'll go fishing after this again.
Right. And so you did. So did you, after the crash, what was the rest of the trip?
Yep. We had, we got out and, like I said, there's a Forest Service place we went to and said we crashed. They were like, okay, it was a no fly day because that's how windy it was. And that wasn't deemed till later. So yeah, we went back and went fishing. Like I said, Taylor's pretty much the only guy that had injuries. I was fine. The pilot has a couple scars, but we went back and went fishing, and it was really cool because by the national park, there's helicopter tours, and this guy decided, hey, I'll go pick them up, and he came and picked us up. And I would say that I sat backwards in the helicopter. Like, we all kind of piled in and I just took the backward seat. I don't know why. And that was scarier than anything else, was flying backwards with that much wind. And then, like you said, you remote places and you're like, holy smokes, is the next mountain, are we going to come into a road? No. Okay. All right. The next mountain, are we going to see somebody? And yeah, so it was wild. And like I said, I always win that game of the two truths and a lie. You know, if they say like I was in a plane crash and everything, people think it's a lie.
That's right. No, I mean, that's the first thing you say if you're in a plane crash. That's because we've heard, I mean, I always go back to the John Gearock episode we had, the first one, I think, that he talked about being in one of those planes up in Alaska and like coming up out of the lake and barely making it above the tree and thinking they're going to crash. But his take was, is that most of those pilots are super, you know, nobody, rarely do people go down. So the fact that you crashed makes me feel like that's almost like one in a million sort of thing almost.
It was wild. It was just a crazy experience. And we're so fortunate to walk away with what we did. And like I said, like you talked about different situations, learning about those situations that could go badly and how to handle them. Yeah. So it was funny. My freshman year in college, we got a private jet to go to the Frozen Four. And it was like super windy, hailing. And all my teammates were like, we're going to crash. We're going to crash. Like, we shouldn't fly. And I was like, guys, what are the odds I get in two plane crashes? Come on.
Yeah, that's right. Very low. Very low. Yeah. This is good. Okay. And what's the national park that you mentioned you're near?
Glacier National Park.
Oh, yeah. Glacier. So have you been up there recently? Are there still some glaciers there with all the climate change and stuff? Do you know that area pretty well still?
I do. I like to maybe avoid some of the hot spots in Glacier. You know, they're so busy now, but it's a great place to grow up. It's right in the backyard. So pretty. And there's so many cool places to get away from the masses into. And I've actually kind of taken a liking to high alpine lake fishing. Like you get somewhere and it seems like you throw one fly out there and there's 10 fish trying to go after it. So
nice. Perfect. And I just want a couple of random ones, then we'll get out of here. One was back to the hockey. I just want to check on that because I've always been a big sports fan. Hockey has not been one that I've been ever a hockey player, but it's interesting. So hockey, I'm assuming you're in Montana, so hockey's big there. It's big in the Midwest. And then you went to school for it. But did you ever, throughout this period, think that hockey was going to be your thing, your career?
Yeah, actually, so it's kind of crazy. Like I said, the little love-hate relationship with Montana was a bit, there's like zero hockey. There was zero hockey. There was nothing. And so I don't know how my family got into hockey. I think it was just one of my brother's friends who said, hey, like you guys should come play hockey. And we went up to Canada, actually, and then I somehow started skating when I was four. And then we went to Canada and I made this boys team, a Canadian boys team in Kootenay. So it was about half hours from my house and we'd go up. My dad would drive me up and I played there grade school. And then high school, I played on a team out of St. Louis Blues organization. And so I flew a lot when I was in high school trying to go play college. And it's definitely growing in the Montana, which is great to see. But Minnesota's a hotbed. Minnesota's a place to go if you want to be a hockey player. What's cool about moving here was, you know, if you tell somebody you're a fly fishing guide in Montana, they're like, wow, let me buy you a beer. If you say you're a hockey player, they're like, I don't really know what that is.
Oh, really?
If you say you're a player here in Minnesota, like, oh, wow, that's amazing. You know, what do you play for? So,
yeah, that's it. So you went to Hamline University and then so you're in the pro. Was there a chance there where you're thinking I'm going to be staying this pro circuit in Austria or maybe is there a pro circuit in the U.S. for women's?
Yeah. So what's actually super exciting is the PWHL just got started actually the beginning of January. It's our newest, latest women's professional organization and it's combined Canada and the U.S. So six teams. Yeah. So I'm still kind of figuring out what I want to do. I've thought about going on club in Sweden. Hopefully there's going to be good fly fishing there. I don't know exactly what it is.
So you're on track. So you're still, this hockey is still a serious thing you're part of.
It's kind of one of those like things that you think is done with your life and then it finds the back door back in. And yeah, I'm really fortunate to have been able to play this long and have it be a part of my life. And also getting into coaching and watching kids, you know, learn how to play hockey and learn those things. I'm in love with the game too is also exciting to see. So spoiled across the board.
That's really cool. Yeah, it's an interesting part. I mean, I remember well when I was in my 25, 26, 27 range. And yeah, it's a time where, you know, there's you can take wrong turns, you know, but I think it's something to keep you focused is key. And I think sports is actually really good for that, right? Has hockey really helped to keep you on track throughout your life?
Yeah, totally. It's you just learn so many things about, you know, who you are and who you want to be and different life skills through sports. And like I said, it's kind of a great balance between going and being a hockey goalie, you know, the 6 months of the year and then coming home and being a fly fishing guide and, you know, escaping into the backcountry the other 6 months. And it's been a great balance, and sports is such a huge part of my life. I couldn't get enough of it. I played, like I said, I played hockey in college. I did track. I got roped into softball, and I played basketball in high school, and my dad made me go out for golf. So it's been a huge part of my life. It's been awesome, and I've been just been blessed to play it this long and hopefully keep coaching it and shooting pucks at people.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, and what is the next kind of looking ahead 6 to 12 months for you as you look at this? What can we expect from what you have going? You want to give a shout out to anything you have coming up, or, you know, what's new for you?
Yeah. So I'm in Minnesota right now doing hockey and then also some athletic administration stuff, because I think I want to be an athletic director. I want to help kids through that kind of mental side of sports. But, you know, so excited for Outcast this summer, running trips, getting people booked out and just connecting with them through these places and storytelling and whatnot. So I'm excited. It's going to be 2024 is going to be a good year. So
good, good. And we'll send it that. That's outcastadventures.com, just to make sure we have. And we'll put a link in the show notes as well so people can click over there and take a look. So perfect, McKenna, that's great today. I think we'll leave it there. And it was awesome getting a little insight into the Trout Routes app and just hearing the story. I mean, the plane crash, this is what's amazing about the podcast is that, you know, capturing those stories, I was never even thinking about a plane crash. But I love that you shared that today. And yeah, thanks for all your time and excited to keep in touch with you.
Awesome, Dave. Thank you so much for having me on.
That is a wrap. You can grab all of the show notes at wetflyswing.com. And please follow us on Instagram and share this episode out with someone you love. Please send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, if you have any feedback or want us to put together an episode on this podcast for you. Check in anytime. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and would love to meet up with you on the water. We have new fly fishing schools going all year long and all around the country. So if you want to connect, let's do it right now. All right, time to get out of here. I hope you have a great evening. I hope you have a great morning or great afternoon, wherever in the world you are. And I appreciate you for stopping by and checking out the show today. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.